CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Leanne Moll. How are you?
Hola. Good, and you?
Very, very good. Very good. It's supposedly today's the day of the national shutdown, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's see what happens. Poor old Ryan had to drive into the studio this morning at like 3 a.m. And we actually said nobody must go to work today just because we didn't have to, right?
Yeah.
Because we're particularly worried or anything. But he had to go and drive all the way in. Let me put him on quickly. I'm going to put you on, all right? There we go. Yo. You had to drive in at 3 a.m.?
I had to drive in at 3 a.m.
Ugh.
That's what, like, nightmare. Last night.
No. Oh, exactly.
Yeah. I heard the stream is offline at like 3:30, and I was like, well, if any protests are going to happen, it's not going to happen at 4 a.m. So,
well, that's the thing. I saw videos of everyone in the EFF kind of gearing up and starting up last night, marching, accompanied by taxis, followed by police cars, lighting candles, torches, singing. And I thought, they're going to be fucking exhausted by this morning.
That was my thinking. I was like, they're not going to start off early because they have the whole day to go today.
I think they're all going to be so tired. Anyway, I see certain people in the EFF, like Buisen and Glossy and so on. You know, people we haven't heard from in so long because they've become boring and like old hat. Nobody cares anymore. I see that he was tweeting 8 hours ago already about students in Braamfontein who were demonstrating already. But I mean, these guys were already demonstrating, what, 2 weeks ago. So the EFF can't claim that they are their people, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Can they?
Yeah, there have to be rules and regulations about this disorder.
Yeah. And then they're saying things like, for example, freedom fighters, obviously talking about the EFF people. These are the members of your communities. Make sure you visit them when they are not wearing no uniforms. So obviously this person is completely illiterate.
Yeah, but that's a double negative. So
what they mean is, and they're taking pictures of like police people and then saying these people must be sought out in the community. I mean, if that isn't straight up intimidation and or a call to violence, I don't know what is. So I hope that the police realize that the real enemies of ordinary South Africans are people like this. And I think if you are dumb enough to tweet things like that, you should just be arrested. And these guys, it's almost like they want to be struggle heroes. So let's give them what they want. Let's arrest them and let them sit in jail for 6 months until they scream and cry for mommy and they ask to be let back into their homes. That's what we need to do. Anyway, Ryan, what did you see on your way through Sandton? Nothing.
Nothing really. I drove through Randburg, drove through Sandton. There's a lot of community members, I'll say, like just driving around patrolling, but that's about it.
Yeah. David says you can't call a shutdown on a day everyone's taking off in any case. All right, Ryan, well, we'll check in with you. You keep an eye on people like Ian Cameron for us, who's he was on the show on Thursday, and he's apparently giving everybody updates today, you know, sort of community policing forum updates and so on. Leanne, what about you? You were meant to wear your red beret, weren't you? You were going to go and join them.
Mm-hmm.
You were.
Yeah, if it wasn't for my bad hip, lovey.
Yes, of course, of course.
Yeah, I've never taken to the streets for anything, and I'm not about to now.
No, exactly. That's my whole point, is you wouldn't get me to join a protest for any amount of money or time or anything. I mean, there's no way I would do it.
I mean, the most I've taken to the streets to is to like pick up a stray cat or a stray dog, but that's about it. I just don't see the point. I really don't.
No. Some people like the idea of protesting. I'm not one of those. Anyway, let's see what happens, because this is, you know, it's an interesting time in South Africa. I do think there are a lot of people who are very frustrated. There are a lot of people who would be inclined to violence, both, you know, the EFF complaining, protesting types, and then the kind of solid society complaining protest types. We'll see who makes the biggest dent, if any. And we'll obviously try to bring you, updates today. I mean, somebody said in the comments here, which put a huge amount of pressure on me. I suddenly thought, oh Jesus. Here, Leanne, she says, it's not you, a different Leanne. I'm coming here for updates on the shutdown. Cliff Central has become my most reliable news source in South Africa. Does anybody know what's going down? Well, clearly not you if you're using us as your news source. I'm just saying, you know?
Yeah, no, we certainly don't proclaim to be hot off the press at any given moment.
New.
Rather like a slow and experienced wisdom collected over the years.
Yeah.
But I mean, just from my own scouring of the news feeds up until late last night, I certainly haven't looked at anything this morning. As mentioned, people were taking to the streets already, but heavily monitored by, in this case, it was the Metro Police. The SANDF, particularly in Cape Town, is on the alert. Mm-hmm. There have been many movements around the country and certainly encouragement on social media platforms to remove collectible or tires and things that were being collected on the side of the road over the weekend in anticipation. There was already, I saw some videos of burning tires in isolated areas.
Yeah, but places already, like Witbank, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to ask a question. It might sound really stupid, but where are all these tires coming from? I mean, do we just have like tons of old tires lying around? What's the story here?
Well, I did see a video of someone who said, a young woman who said, if you find 13-inch, preferably Michelin tires, I need new tires for my car.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, but no, I'm sure that they're retreads or just, you know, collected from secondhand vehicle shops. I also saw that some car sale places had emptied their garages, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, Pinetown. Mercedes-Benz and Ford in particular were the garages that I saw.
Oh, really?
That had emptied all of their new showroom cars and their used cars completely. There was not a car in sight. And if you remember during the riots, and I think that's where they've got the experience from, people were breaking in and damaging those cars. But Pinetown's on huge alert. KZN's like, we've been here, we've done this, we know what to do. You're not touching us.
Right. So if anybody comes up with any clever ideas, the people at KZN are like, no, we know what to do.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are going to keep other things just as usual today. We're going to have Dr. Hanan on in, about 15 minutes or so? No, half an hour from now, 1:45. We've also got someone called Jenny Moore is going to be joining us. She's on a bit of a mission. She says we've got to unmute menopause at work, which I thought might be very interesting discussion because, she says that women shouldn't be sidelined or especially persecuted because at some point in their life, they're going to hit the menopause and they're going to want to take the foot off the accelerator or get more time for themselves and that kind of thing. And I thought, well, why not? And should we care? And if we care, how much should we care? You know? I think it's an interesting thing to discuss. And then at 8:00 this morning, we will be playing you an interview with two of the people we are, of course, celebrating with our friends at TBWA Huntlascaris. 40 years of Huntlascaris. We're going to speak to Carol Soames, Group Operations Director, and George Lowe, who's the creative director there. 40 years that agency's been going.
Amazing. A friend of mine she's in her 60s. She had a stroke recently, and she's an amazing writer. Due to her husband dying quite early on in their family relationship, she stopped working in the corporate world and started, you know, freelancing. But I learned that she was at Huntlascaris about 40 years ago.
Wow.
As one of their writers. And it made me think, I thought, have I got the dates wrong? Because that was 40 years ago. But now I realize I don't.
No, it's absolutely right. And I mean, how amazing, you know, that this agency's not only gone on to achieve their vision. John and Reg set this idea 40 years ago of creating the first amazing creative and award-winning agency out of Africa. And they've done exactly that. There've been a lot of others that have followed, but a lot of them have come from outside and then established themselves in South Africa. This one started here and their work is just, it speaks for itself, you know, over the years. So of course we know them. We're hopelessly biased, but I think anyone who's objective would feel the same way. And we'll be celebrating with them as they, at the end of this month, do their 40 year celebration. Lots of things to talk about. Plenty. How was your weekend? What did you get up to? We're in the middle of a long weekend, so it's a little bit weird to even.
Yeah, it's iffy. It really is iffy. It's one of those times where you think if you were kind of working in corporate or in an office life, it's where you kind of kick yourself on the Sunday and think, I should have taken the Monday off. One of those like weird weekends.
I mean, we thought about doing the show from the studio. We thought about canceling the show. And part of me was like, well, we don't need to do the show, right? Because there are going to be a lot of people who won't be part of the, they'll be sleeping in today or they'll be taking the day or whatever. So I thought maybe we should just cancel. But then I suddenly had this idea that like, no, I'm not going to be one of those people who doesn't do what I would normally do just because of this dumb shutdown. And even though, I mean, it's nice to take an extra day off, which would have been the reason to do it. But I thought, I don't want anyone ever saying that we were a bunch of pussies around this thing. And I'm not one of those people who's easily intimidated. And even though show, you know, it's easy for us to do it from wherever because we learned this during lockdown. I thought it was important symbolically for us to be doing the show. So, you know, Ryan could do it from home. I could do it from home. You could do it from home. Here we are. That's what I thought we would do.
But if you're asking what actually happened on the weekend, I ended up binge watching a whole lot of shows. So what's quite nice now is that you can, I follow these reviewers who maybe do specifically Netflix or a mixture of Netflix and, you know, Prime Video or Disney Plus or whatever it is. And then I just take their suggestions. And they're usually brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
But I watched a lot of, I'm sorry, but true crime documentaries.
Oh, you really this, are a glutton for punishment.
I watched this horror series called Midnight Mass, which was brilliant.
Oh, my God.
And I'm usually not into that sort of thing. But what struck me was the one documentary in particular, which is called Abducted in Plain Sight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this woman. Did you realize that in sort of the late 60s and early 70s is when this took place, people really weren't very fully aware of like child molesters or, you know, sexual crimes against children.
You know,
they knew that there was an uncle who was a bit strange, but beyond that.
What happened was somewhere in the 80s, it became a much more public thing. I mean, you remember in America, they started putting kids' faces on milk cartons and things when they went missing.
Yeah.
And that was only in the 80s. That was like when we were already at like primary school, that kind of thing. Maybe I just don't remember before then because I was so young, but I don't think it was a big deal before then. I think people just kind of accepted that. And listen, life for children, I mean, it's funny to laugh about it now, but it probably wasn't funny for some of them. But I mean, like, kids were just basically left to their own devices, you know. There wasn't all this emphasis on health and safety and, like, being careful. And kids were kind of like, go to work in the coal mines or whatever. I mean, I'm talking, obviously, long before 1960, but it's a weird thing. We've only really grown to understand children and their needs and pay attention to them in a very societal way.
But, because, you know, rightly so. Thank goodness. Decisions.
Of course.
Thank goodness, because there's a whole lot of shit that's been happening under our noses before that. But, I mean, yeah. In this case, half of the documentary that I watched, I was so angry with the parents because of how stupid they were and naive they were. I mean, their neighbor, who was actually he had offended before, but no one really knew about it. He just moved to the area, stated that in his psychological therapy, he needed to, because he was rejected as a child by his mother, he needed to spend time with a young girl. In this case, she was 12.
Oh, God.
In her bedroom in the next door house.
Oh, no.
Sleep next to her at night. And cuddle her. And this went on for 5 to 6 days of the week for 6 months. The parents let him do this. And eventually he abducted her. He went to Mexico. He married her there because you can be 12 in those days. You could be 12 in Mexico and get married. And the parents said, but we had no idea. And I was getting angry with them.
I'm sorry. Is this a true story?
Yes. And it happened twice to the same girl with the same man.
That is ridiculous. Like, I've heard stupid, but these parents must be the dumbest people in the world.
Also, what? The mother ended up having an affair with him.
Oh my God.
And these are like, this is from a very tight-knit Christian community. They all go to church together on a Sunday. It's like,
I've always wondered about those parents who let their kids stay with Michael Jackson for the weekend. And I was always like, why would any parent, I mean, you don't have to be the brightest person in the world, right? You don't have to be super smart or massively kind of intuitive to figure out that, like, this was a wacky guy. And I know he was famous, and for many people, a famous person is like different to everyone else, which is stupid, because often that just gets the famous person to do what they want whenever they want. And I look at these stories and I'm actually like gobsmacked about what kind of parent would let an adult male, for whatever reason, sleep with their 12-year-old daughter?
I have no idea.
Why would you ever say yes to that? There is no good reason. None.
I mean, they obviously carry huge guilt now, and the girl survived, and she now is part of this documentary series, as she looks like she's must be in her 50s. My math sucks. Or 60s perhaps. But They do look back. They're filled with regret, these parents, especially being in today's world and knowing how stupid they were. But they said, literally, we didn't even speak about things like that. We didn't even know they existed. Our parents didn't speak to us about that, they say. And they didn't.
I hate to break from all this pedophile stuff you're talking about.
Sorry.
Ian Cameron says that, as received 6:15 this morning, which is just a couple of minutes ago, some burning tires at Allendale Road in Kalfontein in Midrand. However, no sign of EFF members so far. So we'll keep you updated as we find out stuff. And I see a lot of our listeners are also going to update us. I saw earlier, somebody said here they'll be off to Pretoria North and they will let us know.
Hermine Viljoen.
There we go. Hermine's
got she spelled Pretoria North. N-O-R-F. Pretoria North.
North. Very nice. Thank you, Armin. Graham says the movie Spotlight is based on the newspaper which brought to light the extent of child molestation by priests. Great film. Well, that's another thing. Is like, obviously, during the Middle Ages, you would send your children into the service of the church. Mm. And I suppose no one questioned this. There'd be some creepy, weird priest, because, you know, jobs like that and teaching, they attract people who are sick pedophiles. And by no means am I saying all priests are pedophiles. You know this, but I mean, that's the kind of business they would have gone into. I mean, if you had if you had this thing for kids, then you want to be a sports coach or a teacher or a, they've proven that this is the case. It's not, this is not a controversial thing I'm saying. And imagine your precious child. You're like, okay, well, little Tommy just turned 8. I'm going to send him off to that creepy celibate priest dude down the road, and he's going to learn to light the candles for mass and all that shit. I'm like, what parent doesn't go, there might be a problem here? And I mean, this was happening for hundreds of years. So yeah, I mean, it's awful.
I mean, Madeline, if you think about
in a hotel room and is still missing, great parenting, says Bantu. Oh yeah, and those parents have come under huge criticism over the years, fairly or unfairly. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, there were, if I think back to the 80s when we were having sleepovers at friends' houses, in some cases, my parents hadn't met both parents.
What?
Of the friend.
I wasn't allowed to sleep over, though, unless my parents knew the parents. Like, if I was staying with a friend.
But they'd only met like once and gone, hi, oh, lovely, lovely to meet you. They
scoped them out, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. We've gone to the opposite extreme, but I think the extreme that we're sitting at is better than what I saw over the weekend. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's move on. I know you love talking about this stuff.
Please, can we talk about more crime?
True crime. Well, here's an interesting story. I mean, this is from yesterday. Busasa's liquidator. This is an amazing story. Kluta Murray died on Sunday morning after succumbing to injuries sustained in a shooting near Midrand. I mean, this sounds to me like it was a hit. His son was also shot by unknown gunmen on Saturday while traveling on the N1 in Midrand.
His son died. This was yesterday morning.
Right. His son is 28.
He's been killed.
Yeah, his father was rushed to hospital for urgent medical care. He worked as an insolvency practitioner for the Sachaba Trust, which is a company that was hired as a liquidator for Busasa. Gauteng police are investigating a case of murder. The circumstances that led to the shooting are unknown at this stage. Police request anyone who has information to please contact the Crime Stop line. I mean, what a story, right?
No, because it's really horrible.
We know Busasa and all their involvement in bribery and corruption and fraud, and you know, they've been testifying at the Zondo Commission, and we've actually had the guys on the show who've been intimately involved in this story from the get-go. So I think when you hear about these things, there are some jobs that you probably don't want in South Africa, and I would say doing anything with Busasa or the Guptas, or you know, probably not a good idea.
Well, someone's got to do it, and I think I don't know how I would deal with the fact that I was the target of the hit and my child was killed instead. I mean, that's really heavy.
Awful. No, that's just disgusting. It's almost the end of March already, which means like it should be autumn. And I'm just looking out of the window here and I do see like yellow leaves on the trees, and it makes me a little bit sad inside, Leanne. I have to tell you, I hate fucking autumn. I mean, I obviously hate winter more, but I hate autumn. There are a lot of people who think it's beautiful and, it's so pretty. Autumn's so lovely. I'm not one of those people.
Yeah, my skin starts to itch just at the mere thought. And also the thought of how much gas and electricity we're going to have to use to keep warm. But anyway.
Did you notice that they switched off load shedding over the weekend? There was a stage where there wasn't. I was like, wow, this is how it used to feel. This is how it used to feel back in the days. Back in those,
healthy days
we used to have electricity.
Every time I open the fridge or push down the toaster button or the kettle button, it works. I'm like, what?
You're like, what the fuck is this? Yeah.
This is crazy. When is load shedding going to happen, man? Damn it.
How did we get into the dark ages and actually remember what it was like in classical antiquity? there's a lot to talk about there as well, but we're not going to be moaning and bitching about load shedding, which has become almost...
just quickly, they've done it because of the EFF protest, right? I mean, the protest's number one list on number one thing on the list is they want to protest against load shedding. So,
it's very difficult to figure out what's going on here. I mean, it shows you that they can switch it on if they need to, and it sends completely the wrong signals. I see that Mapelo did what I suggested on Thursday. I went on the show with Pumi on Thursday morning after watching All Quiet on the Western Front the night before. What an amazing movie, says Mapelo. The spatial audio is very good. Well, yeah, I just watched it on my laptop, so I suppose I should have really watched it with proper sound and everything because it would have been even more amazing. But what a movie. And then I don't know what's going around at the moment, but my sister and her boyfriend were here for lunch yesterday, and they said to me they were watching 1917. Which is also a World War One movie, more recently made too, and they said it was brilliant. So, you know, there's obviously something in my family at the moment. We're watching all this like war shit. I think it's my dad. He loves this stuff. I mean, it's his favorite thing. So maybe it's kind of trickled down into my sister and I. I don't think my brother's into this stuff. All right, so we want your updates too this morning. Let us know where you are and what you're up to. Vilmich says, Basasa was a snake pit. Gavin Watson's car accident was also very suspicious. Yeah, I remember he went missing, and then they found him dead near the airport in his car.
Don't be suspicious.
Suspicious, right? I mean, really, really odd. Chulu says, sorry, guys, I'm looking for Julius. Has anyone seen him or knows his whereabouts? Yeah.
I was kind of wondering what he was doing yesterday at about sunset. Yeah, I was like,
there was a meme going around of someone holding up a sign at the robots. You know how they like hold up signs saying no job, painting, whatever. This one said, I will mur Julius Malema for money.
Jeez,
well, there's a cause some people would give money to.
Fight violence with violence.
Right. What were you saying?
I was just wondering what he was doing yesterday at about sunset time. I mean, if I had have organized this national shutdown, months ago, I'd be like a bit nervous. Like, is everyone going to turn up? Do I need to check the guest list? Have I catered for everyone?
Yeah.
What was he thinking?
Yeah. Well, apparently it's raining in Cape Town. That's what people are telling me, which means that it's going to be difficult for them to muster up the numbers that they need. I mean, we've also got to remember, like, a lot of people in South Africa are just very lazy. So there may not be as much action in some places because people are damned lazy. And considering, you know, youth unemployment is at the levels it is. There's a lot of people who have the time, but they might just not have the energy to actually get up and do anything about it. So we'll have to see. They flip and switched off our water, says Andy. So despite all the electricity, you just had so much electricity over the weekend. Everybody had just too much. There was too much to be used. Despite that,
switched off. Electrifying.
Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. So listen, before we get to a few more headlines here, I do want to let Leanne tell us some. This is quite an interesting thing that she's got here. She's found a thread on Reddit. Now, I don't know Reddit. I haven't used Reddit before. I mean, I know what it is because we've covered it in the news, but I certainly don't have like Reddit on my phone or on my laptop. And apparently people post these threads there and then everybody joins in. It's like one of the biggest, sites stroke apps in the world. And obviously people share all kinds of things. There's recipes and, you know, like DIY tips and all kinds of stupid shit. You found a thread where people have gone in with the express purpose of anonymously confessing their deepest, darkest secrets. And I suppose for some people, this is like the most cathartic thing you can do. So I wanted to bring this in before we go to Dr. Hanan, because he might have something to say about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the thread, the Reddit threads are, or subreddits, they call them, are organized by r/ and then a keyword. And this one's confession, the confession subreddit. It's massively popular, with nearly 5.3 million members. And it's a safe place for everyone to like admit your wrongdoings and acknowledge your guilt, alleviate your conscience. So at any point in time, you can go on and read people's deepest confessions. And you don't have to be someone who is interested in other people. You just get started on this and you realize what people are walking around holding inside themselves. For instance, there's some that you're going to hate. So as I flip through these, I'm just like, okay, so there's this woman.
Don't do it on my account. I mean, if they're interesting ones, go for it. Don't worry about me.
There's a woman who gives her three-year-old son counterfeit fast food. So basically when they go to McDonald's, for instance, she saves the Happy Meal boxes and all the wrappers, and she reuses them. Serving him microwave chicken nuggets and oven French fries. She even throws in the ketchup packets and the little toys that he'd forgotten to help sell the lie.
That's so clever, but it's so much work.
She says he loves it and I'm not sorry. Wow. There's something here that I remember Damon doing when we were in the 5FM studio. This person says, I trash my coworkers' mugs and dishes when they leave them soaking in the community sink. He used to do that. He'd come in the morning and just throw all the mugs in the bin.
Oh, yeah, because people didn't wash them. And it would be such a disgrace. Like, we'd be the first show in the morning. And then, obviously, people would, they'd left this mess anyway.
Yeah. But then it gets, like, you know, quite saucy and quite interesting. So there's someone who says...
These are the ones that I was more interested in. So get to those.
There's someone who says, I'm dying, but I haven't told anyone. This person is like way into their cancer treatment and they've just kind of made arrangements around their death. They've already kind of tied up their assets and got everything ready without telling anyone because they'd just rather have their last moments filled with happiness than people worrying about them.
Okay. It's quite a, that's not the happy sort of, this is quite serious shit.
Yeah. There's someone who says, my wife thinks I take my daughter or our daughter to dancing classes, but I actually take her to an MMA gym.
That's cool. All right.
She's been doing that for like 2 years.
Epic. Like, is it a good idea to lie about shit like that inside your relationship or with the mother of your kid? Like, I think there's probably a place where you could just eventually, after 3 months, just break it to her, you know, like, hey, by the way, I'm taking the daughter here.
This one I really identify with. I sold fake drugs. At a party in high school, I found a bottle of vitamin C pills in the bathroom. And decided to tell the other drunk kids that it was ecstasy and sold it to them for $20 a pill. I ended up leaving with about $200.
All right, that's good. And no one gets hurt.
I made my brother think he has alopecia for the last 15 years.
Oh, no.
But he regrets it to this day. When he was 15, he got his first job and started to save some money. Mm-hmm. So his brother would sneak into the bathroom and use the things that he was now able to buy, like his salon brand shampoo.
Right.
And this drove him insane. His parents said, you know, just learn to share. But he was over it and he bought hair removal cream and mixed this into the shampoo bottle. He did give him a verbal warning not to use this new shampoo bottle. But his brother stole it anyway. And after a few days, his hair started to fall out and bald patches started to appear.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's just very cool.
He says his hair did grow back, but I recently found out that he's still using special shampoo to prevent another alopecia flare-up. It's been 15 years.
That's horrible, man. I would be – we spoke about this on the show on Friday because, you know, we were talking about whether your baldness, Simpiwe has this wacky theory that your baldness comes from if your index finger is shorter than your ring finger as a man. Doesn't matter. And then we got into a whole thing because Ben said, well, apparently it comes from your mother's side of the family. So people, you know, there are a lot of people who are very uptight about this stuff. Imagine actually making your brother bald. That's just, I mean, surely the other way.
When you're 15, you have no feelings regarding how that person's going to feel for the rest of their life. Absolute disregard.
Oh, my God. All right. These don't sound so bad, I have to say, except for that suicide one. That's pretty awful. But the rest, I mean, they don't sound like they're life-threatening. You know, kind of cutesy, putting vitamin C drugs and trying to sell them. It's not the end of the world.
Remember, I used to put, with my neighbor, we used to take the little perfume samples in those tiny glass bottles. And yes. Replace them with our urine and put them in the neighbor's post boxes with a kind note saying, here's some free perfume.
Oh, my God. I don't remember you telling that story. That's brilliant.
You didn't like
your neighbors very much, right?
We'd sit in the bush for hours watching, waiting for them to come home and open up their perfumes and smell them.
Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, God, the 80s, hey?
Yeah. So Ben says, quick update, not many cars on the road on the way to work, but no protests to be seen. Okay, but you must tell us where
you are. I'm telling you, they're exhausted because they started at 7 o'clock last night.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to get to Dr. Hanan now because maybe we should start off. I mean, we've got a whole lot of things to talk to him about. How are you, Doc?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good. There's no national shutdown for you. Are you carrying on with work as usual today?
So probably 80% of my patients have decided to do Zoom online sessions. They are afraid. 20% are coming in, but the process continues.
All right. Well, I want to start off before we get to the other things that we want to talk about. There's this Reddit thread that Leanne found where people are making these real life confessions. And I just thought it might be interesting to, just before we tap into all the other stuff, is it cathartic and good to share deep, dark secrets? Is there something about this that is healthy and sensible for human beings? Or are these people just attention seekers or maybe people who need to vent because no one's listening to them? What do you make of like sharing secrets? Is this a good thing?
So for me, there are two parts to sharing. First of all, sharing is incredibly therapeutic and cathartic. I usually give the analogy of a puzzle. Imagine you have 1,000 puzzle pieces on your lap. It's very Yes. difficult to put together the puzzle once it's on your lap. You have to throw it out and suddenly corner and corner, green and green, yellow and yellow, and it begins to make sense. Emotions work the same way. If I keep emotions on the inside, it's very difficult for me to make sense of it and shelve it and compartmentalize it and move forward. If you think about it, most traumas are traumas because we can't make sense of it. It just doesn't add up. There's a sense of injustice. There's a sense of incoherence. It just doesn't make sense. So once we put it outside of us, that's when it begins to make sense because we gain a little bit of distance and perspective. But the second, the opposite side of the coin is, who are you sharing with? Who's calibrating you? It's like me having a fight with my wife and going and meeting my best friend for advice. And this particular best friend has been divorced 47 times and has cheated on every single one of his girlfriends. Who am I really being calibrated by? Who's really giving me advice? Who's really giving me direction? What instrument am I relying on to guide me in the right or the wrong direction? So it's one thing sharing, but the question that you've got to ask yourself, who are you sharing with and what advice are you getting really?
Well, we got a little fight going on with me and Leanne this morning. It's something that we've often spoken about on the show. So let's get straight into this. I think you'll probably be able to advise us as to who's right and wrong or who could improve and who might not. It is in the left corner, Leanne Mole, standing up for body positivity And in the left corner, Gareth Cliff standing up for fat shaming. Yes, that's what I've been reduced to. I'm now an advocate for fat shaming. Leanne is an advocate for body positivity. In reality, though, Doc, I mean, neither of us are particularly. I'm not hugely passionate about this. I say a lot of mean things about fat people. I have to watch that I don't get fat, because otherwise I will be torn to pieces by those same people. Keeps me in shape.
So you put the pressure on yourself.
Perversely, it works for me. But I do think that there's a funny thing going on in society right here. And, you know, while neither Leanne and I nor I are particularly fierce advocates for either side, it is an ongoing and very, very heated discussion in society. You know, we see a lot of magazines. I saw a comedian just this weekend saying, what happened here in the United States? A friend of his got back from Pakistan. He said, did you guys just decide suddenly that, you know, fat girls were beautiful? Because every magazine has now got a fat girl on the cover. And this friend of his in Pakistan couldn't understand it. And there is a thing going on. Like, there's this huge body positivity movement, which even I can admit some of it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, why would you want to be mean if you don't have to be mean? And there is a certain amount of like general friendliness and care and politeness and being kind. And being kind, yeah, that is probably called for in society. And then on the other hand, you've got people who say, well, no, the kindest thing you can do is tell someone who's fat to lose the weight, because otherwise they're going to die young. You know, fat people never make it much past 60 or 70. And it's worth discussing this with people. So I don't know where you sit on this, Leanne. Do you want to plead your case to Dr. Hanan, and then we can see what he says?
Well, I think it's important to just position myself and where I am in the world of this argument or this discrepancy. I consider myself fat. And unfortunately, I always have, even when I was thin. And I think it's important to state that I've kind of been on diets from about the age of 11. I was brought up in a diet culture. And I probably messed up my metabolism completely from doing that. I was always trying to lose weight, even when I was still growing. So for me to have this body positivity world come out is such a relief. Because it was something that I would never talk about before. I was approached while we were still in our 5FM days to become a plus-sized model. I was so offended. I cried for a week. I was so offended. In the meantime, plus size meant not a size 8 or 6.
Right.
It meant you were a 12. You know, the fact that I went up to a size 18 at one point, well, that was a big deal for me.
Didn't we made a couple of really great parody songs about you being a plus size model with big tits, didn't we?
Well, we didn't mention plus size model. We just mentioned the tits. Those were those days. So anyway, I do carry, pardon the pun, a lot of weight behind this.
Sure.
But it is a relief to see that it's okay to be this size. It's a relief to, and I'm certainly not as big as I used to be. It's a relief to know that you can still be healthy. And again, I'm not an advocate for that. I drink too much. I smoke. I don't exercise. I don't eat a lot, actually. My calories are kind of taken up by wine and a packet of crisps for dinner. But I don't eat these vast. I'm not one of those like mukbang eaters who eat these vast amounts of food. I don't have that relationship with food. But it's a relief to know that you can be healthy at a certain, you know, any size, that weight size and BMI are not indicators of health. I'm not a healthy person. But also that there isn't a certain look for health. You know, there's a recent thing with Gwyneth Paltrow out. She looks about 75, I must just tell you, without judging on too many people. She's hooked up to an IV while she's talking about her lifestyle, her healthy lifestyle. Her IV has some kind of rare vitamin in it. And she looks haggard and tired. So she basically doesn't eat anything from 6 p.m. until 12. At 12, she has coffee. And then a little bit later, she has bone broth. And then for dinner, she has vegetables. It's just insane. It's insane. I think I look about 20 years younger than her, and she we're almost the same age. So Leanne, there's a lot.
I want to ask you. So how do you feel about, let's say, Gareth's position about, well, being overweight is unhealthy. Maybe it's a burden on the economy, and body shaming. Maybe people that are oversized, and maybe even you fit into that category as well. Yeah. How do you feel about that? Is that helpful to you in any way? Because he says, well, it's helpful to him because it puts pressure on him to not put on the weight. Do you think it could be helpful to you?
It's the opposite of helpful. I mean, I didn't come into the studio for the longest of time because I was concerned about what people would think of the way I looked. And that kind of perpetuates feeling overwhelmed and not ending up taking the right steps to look after yourself. I remember years back there was a girl who said to Gareth, thank you for fat shaming. She never mentioned the word then. We didn't have it then because it helped me lose weight. But
yeah, her name was Fat Pat.
Fat Pat. But I find it has the opposite effect. And as far as bearing weight on the economy, I don't think, Gareth, that's really your concern. I think you just don't like looking at fat people.
That's true.
For someone like me, it's difficult. You're put into a position of shame and feeling worthless all the time. When in Gareth's presence or when looking at the photographs of him with his thin friends. You know,
he has
the picture perfect group of friends that go away together.
It's not entirely true.
Not entirely.
So Gareth, I want to ask you. I want to ask you before I would like to give my opinion. But how do you feel? I mean, hearing Leanne saying that's actually does the opposite of helpful. When people body shame me or fat shame me, it actually does the opposite. It doesn't make me feel nice. It prevents me from engaging with society. It hurts my feelings. What does that do to you?
Look, normally I would just say I don't give a shit because I think that she's just got to face up to the same thing that I'm no worse than her mirror, right? I'm not mean. Her mirror's not mean. It's just what it is. She thinks that that I only have thin friends. I think that she's making excuses, and she could take control of things here. But actually, that's not true, because I've known her a long time, and I do consider Leanne a friend. I do consider her someone that I care about. And to be perfectly frank, I kind of stopped thinking about Leanne's fatness or non-fatness a long, long time ago. I see the person. And I'm not making excuses here or trying to be an empath, because you know I'm not that guy. But I haven't thought about whether Leanne is fat or thin for the longest time, and I couldn't give a shit. We talk like this once a week, and we used to do it far more than this. And I mean, I really do care about her. So I've long ago stopped caring about what she looks like.
Right. My opinion is as follows. I don't think that bullying has really any place when it comes to human interaction, especially when it comes to somebody that you know. You know, we care far more about the people that we know, the one person that's stuck, than the genocide that happens, you know, somewhere in Africa where a million people are stuck or get killed or get hurt. Because suddenly when you form relationships with people, to your point, Gareth, you actually stop seeing, you know, what the person looks like, and you start engaging with the person. The question that you've got to ask yourself if you are fat shaming or body shaming somebody is, what's the point? What's the intention? What's the goal? And if you think your strategy is aligned with your goal. So you go, well, no, fat people are a cost on the economy. Fat people, even by the way, in medieval times, fat people are seen as immoral. And they don't subscribe to what is called natural beauty. And therefore, they don't fit in. We must get them out. The question that you got to ask yourself is, okay, well, if you feel that they're unhealthy, if you feel that they need to be healthy, if you feel that they need to maybe take up less cost around the economy, do you think that your approach is the best approach to get them there? Do you think your approach is the ultimate way to get them from point A to your point B, to your desired point B? The second question that you've got to ask yourself is, how much control do you think you have over somebody else? And if you think that you have any influence over somebody else, you are absolutely deluding yourself. The person only changes when they want to. And by the way, I see this on a daily basis. People come sit on this couch. One day I'll turn the camera, I'll show you the couch. And they want to change. But I want to tell you something. About 70% of people that come here and want to change still do not change. Because change is so difficult. And even when somebody wants to, it's still way too difficult for them to actually make the change, even if they want to and even if they know the know-how or if they know how. So if you think you have any kind of influence over somebody, you are deluding yourself. If you want them to change, first of all, you've got to create the kind of trust in the relation for them to actually want to do it and teach them the strategies and the methods and the blueprints and the frameworks to get them from point A to point B. I'll say one more thing. When I'm dealing with kids, especially kids that come into the session and they just distrust this adult whose parents have sent them to this funny looking adult who wants to get through to their feelings. The first thing that I do without any shadow of a doubt is gain their trust. Because the moment I start dictating what they should do, they will never come back again, ever. They will never, ever open up. They will never drop their guard down. They will never share. They will never change. So if you really want somebody to move from point A to point B, gain their trust first. Make sure that they understand that you're on the same team. Highlight what it is that you're looking for. Create a framework and help do it with them.
What do you say to that, Leanne?
That sounds like sound advice to you, Gareth.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we did a thing on bullying last week, Doc, and we spoke a little bit about this with a bully and a bullier, and I mean the bully and the bullied. And I do hear you, but I also think that we've maybe got to a point now where we're starting to delude ourselves, like we're actually starting to bullshit ourselves. I thought Leanne put the case very well about how she feels about her own self-image and how she feels about when people like me say the things that we say, which I buy. I mean, I've got no reason to disbelieve her or to think that she's not being honest about this. The difficulty I have is that there are a vast number of people in the world who are actually deluding themselves that this is healthy, that it's good for them, that it's other people being mean, that they don't have any responsibility for this. It's a lifestyle, all of that.
I mean, it's actually
your case, Leanne. I don't think you're trying to plead that case. But
no,
I think
exactly. But I can see, and I mean, I follow a lot of body positive people purely because, you know, it's in my wheelhouse. I think what's the there are people who have bigger issues than you and I out there. There are people who are actually angry at fat people for thinking that they're healthy. And then there are fat people who think that they're allowed to just be fat and allowed to, they've now been given permission to just be happy in their fatness and continue eating. And
you are, but don't
that is a problem.
Just like I can't force you to feel bad by being like shitty about it. You can't force me to think it's perfectly okay.
But it's not really in that extreme case. It's not really your problem or business.
I want to
it's
say,
like
I want
worrying,
to say
worrying about if someone's gay or not. You know, sorry.
I want to say one more. Sorry, Leanne. I just want to say one more thing. I know we've run out of time, but this is an important part to your comment, Gareth. That I need to highlight. If you're overweight, you know the biggest proponents of being overweight or the opposite of body shaming is, well, it's my life. I can do whatever I want with it. And I take great issue with that, because the truth is, if you're a parent, it's not just your life. And if you're a spouse, it's not just your life. And if you're a child, it's not just your life. You live in a community of people, and your health involves everybody around you, because if you get sick, it affects everybody in your community. Right. If you die, it creates trauma for everybody in your community. So the whole notion of I can smoke because it's my life, I can eat whatever I want because it's my life, does not hold water. Only if you're a narcissist and you're a selfish person, yes, it's just got to do with you. But once you live in a community and you have children, you have parents, you have siblings, no, you live in a community and you've got to ask yourself what's best for the community.
Of course. And I think that applies definitely when you're within your own family and providing suggestions and care for people in your own family. But if it's randomly looking at a fat girl on a plane and just hating her because she's fat, then it's kind of not really your problem.
Well, I'm going to give David in the comments the last word on this. He says, being fat is not acceptable. It's simple as that. It's gross, and no amount of excuses and psychobabble can make it otherwise. Right there. That's how we're wrapping up.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. You. Okay, nice to see you.
All right. And Thanks, don't worry. Leanne and I are going to carry on having this conversation for many, many years into the future.
I'm just going to surprise you one day by coming in with in a bikini with my fupa hanging out, my azimuth.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. All right. We will be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com. I can't believe we already had an hour behind us. It feels like just 5 seconds since we started the show. It is Monday. It's supposedly the day of the national shutdown. We'll keep you updated. We've got lots of people who are watching what's happening there, and we will let you know what their updates are. Also, keep scouring the social media just in case you are one of those people who's justifiably a little bit worried. CliffCentral.com.